This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, we're definitely leaving all of this in.
Oh, totally.
I have a feeling we're about to embark upon a most unprecedented expedition.
And welcome to the second episode of Stacey and Elliot's
Bogus Journey.
This is our third episode.
Well, it is.
Official, yeah.
Brad has officially changed the canon because our last episode was number one, so we're not including the pilot. And I called it the second episode on the show, so I feel silly repeating it, but this is officially the second episode. There's the pilot and then number one and now this, so that's the way we're doing it, so.
We're off to a good start this time.
Yeah, yeah. We don't know what number we're on, but. Yeah, this is good, yeah. So, apart from that, how are you doing, Elliot?
I'm doing really good. I'm excited to talk about some weird matches today.
Yes,
yeah,
we did.
Doing good.
We went weird, yes. We
went weird.
Without much further ado, you'll need to tell me the tale of the Matsunaga.
Okay, so yeah, the first match we did is Alexander Otsuka versus Mitsuhiro Matsunaga from November 1999 Battle Arts. It's one of my favorite matches ever. We had decided on a show. We were going to do trios matches, and then we couldn't get a date scheduled, and then we wanted to pick new matches, and then this was like my fourth match that I picked or something. And I picked it because it just randomly appeared online earlier in February. It hasn't been online in like a watchable form for forever. And so once I saw it pop up, I'm like, oh shit, this is it. Because I was talking to you about Battle Arts, because you're not a big 2000s Battle Arts fan, so I wanted to try and get you some 90s stuff. And this is a really good, not really intro to Battle Arts match, because it's not very Battle Arts-y, but...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, I have a picture in my head of what a Battle Arts match looks like.
Yeah, and this is not
that. And this is not it. It was not it.
This is not that at all. So this is one of my all-time favorite matches. I love Alexander Otsuka, a totally weird goofball wrestler. You know, he's a great mat worker. He's the real human suplex machine. Stiff strikes, crazy headbutts. But then he's doing airplane spins and dives out of the ring, just crazy stuff. And then Matsunaga, of course, is a deathmatch worker. So somebody very, very different. Had you ever seen Matsunaga before this?
No, I had never seen Matsunaga before this. I know nothing about Matsunaga other than the fact that I know there is something called Stop the Matsunaga.
Yes.
And I have absolutely no idea what it is. I just know that it exists as an angle. Was it an actual angle, or was it an angle that Dean just imagined in his head?
That it was created. Well, it was an actual angle.
Okay.
I mean, all the really good shit was created in Dean's head. I think at least all the wacky comparisons to, like, you know, how it was the most redneck thing ever. But basically, like, Stop the Matsunaga happened several years after this. I want to say it was like 2007, maybe. I don't know. But basically, it was a bunch of older veterans like Masashi, Aoyagi, and they were like Co. I honestly couldn't even tell you who is a part of it other than Matsunaga. And I can really just kind of give you the bare outline of it, even though I like have the disc and I watched it all one night. But basically, like, older karate fighters were going up against younger pretty boy karate fighters, and the older karate fighters were upset because one of them, like, posed as a model in a magazine or something like that, and they thought that, you know, wrestling isn't the place for pretty boys or something. And so these old guys challenged the young guys. Old guys kept getting their asses kicked. And so they brought in a secret enforcer, and it was Matsunaga, who actually started as, like, a karate master. He was part of the original incarnation of FMW that started off with Onita fighting karate fighters as a way, kind of as a take on the old Inoki trope of trying to take, trying to prove pro wrestling's mastery as a fighting skill. So Matsunaga was a karate guy, and then he eventually kind of transformed into this crazy deathmatch guy. So it kind of works psychologically that he would be this karate guy that these other veteran karate dudes bring in. And so he basically just goes about stabbing all of the young pretty boy shoot fighters in the face. And that's what the feud is about. And then eventually the guy that brought Matsunaga in was, like, horrified at the terror that he had unleashed. And so they have to, you know, fight to the death. It's a ridiculous feud, but really, really entertaining.
Yeah, no, it sounds awesome. Like,
yeah, it's one of those things that I think it's even in my piss poor description of it, people should really go and find the old Dean Rasmussen Stop the Matsunaga posts from DVDVR, because they are amazing, and they make this the feud just sound like the greatest thing in history. And it's not that, but it's definitely really entertaining. But just the whole concept of Matsunaga is really awesome, and the whole concept of Alexander Otsuka is really awesome. So you throw those two in a match together, and you get this fucking thing, which is totally nuts from start to finish, basically. Yeah, so that's kind of how Matsunaga started, though, is he was this karate guy that was fighting Onita, and then broke off when they formed, I guess it was Wing, and was, like, one of the top deathmatch workers of the 90s. And that's why you've got a guy in a karate gi or karate pants wearing a black belt that's also got vampire teeth in, and he's carrying a sword, and he's trying to stab people.
Exactly. It makes total sense. Like, yeah, that's what, like, because that's what I just said. Like, I picture in my mind what a battle arts match looks like. And I even picture in my mind what an Alexander Otsuka match looks like. Because I'm more familiar with him. I've seen him a couple times. And it's just,
yeah,
like,
he wrestled all over.
It's just, this is so far away from what I'm used to from him, or what I expect from him, I guess. It was just, that's what, like, startled me more than anything. That, like, you know, Otsuka, who I, you know, associate, yeah, with, like, suplexes and dives and, like, crazy lucha shit in the middle of, you know, battle arts and stuff.
Yeah, in the middle of, like, shoot fighty, shoot yeah. Mapper,
and then
grapple fuck, whatever it's called.
Yeah, and then he comes out here and basically he's just stuck in a, like, horror movie, basically, with Matsunaga.
It's totally a horror movie. That's such, like, a great description.
Like I said, the first time I watched the match, I was pretty baked, and
yeah,
I was quite horrified by what was happening, and I thought someone might actually die. So, now that I've watched it again, I've calmed down, but still, it's not by much, because someone really, like, you know, was gonna die at some point in this match. Like, it's just, it's mental. Like when it started, I'm sitting here thinking Matsunaga must have said some shit about Otsuka's mama or something, because, like, he came out and just started wailing on him. And, like, within the first minute, Otsuka is, like, hanging him by his black belt from the ropes, like, literally hanging him. trying to kill. That was like the first attempted murder of the match, and it was like, and it was like not even a minute in. Like, well, okay, this is different.
That actually was it. I love this match so much because all of like the whole first part of the match was really, you know, it was Atsuka in command. You know, he jumped him before the bell and he starts throwing forearms and kicks. And yeah, he rips Matsunaga's black belt off and he starts hanging him with it, tries to choke him out, kill him. And all of a sudden they're brawling around ringside. They're, you know, Otsuka's posting him, you know, he bloodies him right away, basically. And Matsunaga's just totally overwhelmed, seemingly, but he kind of wasn't. And it makes sense, like, the, you know, if you kind of think about Matsunaga and everything that he's been through, you know, he's somebody that's been in barbed wire matches and, you know, explosion matches, you know, just like crazy hardcore deathmatch shit, that you kind of know that he can take a forearm to the face, you know? Yeah. So I look at this whole first part of the match as him like just kind of playing possum and saying, all right, give me your best shot, you know, let's see what you got. And Otsuka kind of plays right into that, and instead of, you know, wrestling with him, it's just he goes straight into brawling with him, you know, straight into trying to choke him, trying to hang him, brawling around ringside. And he's not really wrestling his match. He's kind of wrestling Matsunaga's match.
Yeah.
And he's not gonna be able to beat him in Matsunaga's match. And there's such a great spot. You know, Matsunaga's just kind of fucking with him early on. After he kind of gets his after he gets his ass kicked for a little bit, it slows down a little bit. Matsunaga offers a handshake to kind of just like, all right, kick my ass, you know, you posted me, you know, I get it, you know, let's have a clean match. Let's have a clean match. And he offers a handshake. So things kind of settle down. They're sort of like cautiously like throwing little kicks at each other and then like moving away and then, you know, throwing another kick and maybe dodging it or maybe it hits, you know, just kind of slows down. And then it kind of goes like I said, Matsunaga's kind of playing possum because he goes for just like the most casual lockup you've ever seen in history. Like first day of wrestling school, like 1/10 speed attempt at a lockup. And Otsuka, being this highly skilled amateur wrestler who's known for his technique and everything, just immediately reverses this awful attempt at a lockup, goes behind and then plants Matsunaga with this German suplex. It's beautiful, absolutely, absolutely amazing. And it puts Matsunaga down. And it's battle arts, so we get a 10 count, and while the ref's counting to 10, Matsunaga's kind of doing something. And right when he gets to 9, all of a sudden he throws a fucking fireball.
A fucking fireball. That's like his first offensive move of the match, like to throw a fireball.
And that's our transition.
That's our transition into the horror movie.
That's our transition. Matsunaga took everything that Otsuka could think of to dish out. You know, he took his big suplex. He took
all the brawling, you know, in that.
Otsuka's like, sad attempt at brawling and, you know, and it's like, a badass. And it's just like, okay, that was it. That was you. This is my game.
Yeah, like,
welcome to it. Here's a fireball.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it's funny because, like, you can sort of see Otsuka's, like, game plan, even if it sort of backfires on him because you get sucked into Matsunaga's game, but like you can see him like looking at Matsunaga and thinking, well, shit, I better try and kill him before he kills me. So that's right. Sort of like his rationale for like going out there hot and like trying to kill him right off the bat and like and getting into this brawl, because he's just like, well, I, you know, I've just got to jump him before, you know, he tries to kill me. And he does that, and he tries his hardest to, like, sort of do that, but it doesn't, you know, he can't get it done because Matsunaga takes some putting down.
Exactly.
And then as soon as Matsunaga gets a chance, he's just like, well, now we're going to school. Like,
you know, the brawling early is great. You know, it's a bunch of stiff shots. It's bumping into chairs.
Yeah,
the German suplex was awesome. But
it doesn't put him down, yeah.
This isn't a normal human being. This is Mitsuhiro Matsunaga. This is a fucking crazy man. And so he just threw a fireball at him. It was like, oh shit. I'm so jealous that you got to watch this match and not know that was coming.
Oh, I didn't know it was coming. I was expecting battle arts and I got this.
Yeah. Cause it's not, yeah, it's just out of nowhere. Here's fire to your face.
And this is like 5 minutes in. Like I said, that was like Matsunaga's like first real offensive move was to throw a fireball.
Exactly. He was just sandbagging him the whole first part of the match, letting Otsuka get his best shot in.
Yeah, punch him, like, letting him punch out. And then, then we get the second attempted murder of the match.
and then the second attempted murder, which is immediately followed up by the third attempted murder, because as the ref is, like, checking on Otsuka because his eyes have been burned out of his head, you see Matsunaga's going for something in his boot, and he pulls out a spike, and he starts stabbing Otsuka in the face.
Yeah. He's stabbing him. That was brutal enough, because he was just, yeah, like, there's that blood everywhere now, and he's just, like, he's just stabbing his face, basically. There's nothing else to... But
Matsunaga dominates with face/head stabbing and choking. So the opposite of battle arts.
Exactly, yeah. But, like, not only does he stab him in the face, but then he's like, no, that's not enough. He moves on to, like, stabbing him in the neck.
Yeah.
He takes the spike and he's, like, jabbing it into his neck, like, where there are actual arteries and he could die.
Oh, my God. And so, yeah, so... Matsunaga kind of continues dominating that way. And then we finally get a little brief ray of sunshine when Otsuka remembers, hey, I'm a fucking wrestler and not a garbage match fighter. And so Matsunaga is going for a clothesline and Otsuka ducks it and slips in an abdominal stretch.
I love that. Like, I loved it so much because, I've never been in an actual fight in my life, but, like, I just, like, I feel like if someone was stabbing me in the neck, my move of choice to get out of this predicament would not necessarily be an abdominal stretch.
But
because it's Otsuka, it works because he's like you said, like he's thinking, I need to get back to what I do better. And then he pulls out a wrestling move, you know?
It's quintessential it's as pro wrestling as a submission hold gets.
Yeah.
And that's what he is. That's how he knows that. He knows now that he can't really beat Matsunaga at a brawl. He thought he could.
Yeah, he tried, but...
Even after the match started, he thought he could. He got all cocky and was kicking his ass. But once he hit that fireball, he realized the stakes are up. I didn't bring a shield. This guy's got a sword. Fuck. So he's got to wrestle him.
I love that spot so much. And it worked, you know, like it got him out of it, you know. It got him to top with an abdominal stretch.
And so, you know, Matsunaga fights his way to the ropes. And even though we're talking about how he's countering garbage style face stabbing with pro wrestling moves like an abdominal stretch, we can't forget that this is Alexander Otsuka. So after Matsunaga bails to the outside, we immediately get the dive over the top.
Yeah, big,
from Otsuka.
Big tope.
The big tope con hilo with the bloody face. I love Otsuka's dive. You know, obviously this is a great one, but doesn't touch the ropes, no hands on the ropes, and just swan dives over the top.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys where, you know, there's Flyers, and then there's Flyers whose offense looks dangerous, and every time Otsuka does a dive, it is so violent looking, so dangerous looking.
Yeah, yeah. It's impactful, you know.
Yeah,
always.
And think about how much more dangerous it is, considering that he just got stabbed in the face and had fire thrown at him, blood all over him.
So he's pretty pissed.
He's pretty pissed, but he's also desperate, you know, he's got to do whatever he can, and unfortunately for him, that kind of plays right back into Matsunaga's hands because
they're outside again.
Now
and
they're back
start
on the outside,
brawling in chairs and stuff, and then he gets killed again, you know, because
exactly, yep.
Matsunaga gets to pick up a chair and bash him with it.
Now he's in Matsunaga's playground, and we're now past that opening part where Matsunaga was just sandbagging and just letting him throw his best shot at him. Now he's going to fight back on the outside.
Yeah.
And that's what you don't want. So then, another like amazing, amazing, amazing spot. When they go back in the ring, Matsunaga is all cocky now, so he decides that he wants to wrestle, and he puts a full Nelson on Otsuka.
Yeah.
And Otsuka, of course, instantly reverses it.
Yeah.
And then kicks him down into a choke. However, this leaves him wide open for a Matsunaga reversal with more stabbing. Only this time, he's not going after he's not stabbing him in the face, he's going after his wrist.
Yeah, this is what freaked me out the first time.
Also a lot of veins.
Yes, exactly. Like... it was just the escalation really got to me, because like first he like tries stabbing him in the face, like, okay, and then he's stabbing him in the neck, and now he's like trying to dismember him.
now it's an assisted suicide.
Yeah,
like he's
yeah,
Dr. Kevorkian and Matsunaga.
Yeah, and he's trying to take his whole hand off at the wrist, like,
yeah.
Just sawing him up.
Yeah, and you get your first really good shot of Matsunaga's vampire teeth at this point, because that's yeah, how he initially reverses. Like, he bites him on the arm,
yeah,
and that kind of gets him, like, releases the choke, and then he starts taking the spike into the wrist.
Yeah, that freaked me out, too.
It's one thing to work over an arm or a leg, but to go after the veins in somebody's wrist is pretty.
That's
pretty beautiful.
Pretty, yeah, disgusting in a beautiful way.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. That's pro wrestling,
but, like,
right there.
The other, like, my other favorite thing about this moment was when the ref is distracted by like someone on the outside, and that's when he's stabbing him in the wrist. And then the ref turns around after all this and sees Otsuka full of holes. and he's just like, yeah, no, this is fair dinkum, keep going. Like refs are funny like that. But in that instance, it made me laugh, because like the ref turns around for a minute and then he turns back around and like Otsuka literally like has holes in him. Since he saw him last, and he just thinks, "Nah, this is fake. Like, fair enough. Just keep going."
That's like normal. That's from like a hammerlock.
Yeah, it was an accident.
the selective enforcing of rules is always a lot of fun in wrestling, especially in matches like this, or like an old chic matches where it's just like, "What do you think he's doing to him?"
Exactly. Yeah, like. You know, it's one thing when someone's cut up, like, you know, someone gets blood on them or whatever, or like gets hit with a, you know, with a belt or something that leaves no mark, but like, yeah, like this guy's literally like full of holes right now, like bleeding from all his major arteries, and you're just like, yeah, that probably happened legally.
he does try and stop him.
When he sees the spike,
there's finally a spot where he like, and it's right towards the end, where he finally, you know, openly sees him trying to stab it, and he goes over and he blocks, he grabs Matsunaga's hand himself to stop him, and that gives Otsuka the opening to throw the hardest fucking headbutts you've ever seen. I know we talked about that in the French match last time.
Yeah.
But, oh my,
he's
like
gross.
He's like leaping forward into these headbutts. Like, it is crazy.
Yeah, they are so like, and again, and it made me laugh at this point with the, you know, because it's now like this guy has had enough. Just had enough. So he's like, well, like, if you try and kill me with a spike, like, by stabbing, I'm just going to turn around and try and kill you with my bare head. Like, like, I don't even care anymore.
And what's cool about that, before the show, we were talking about the TVTropes.org website, because there's an Alexander Otsuka entry, and there's some really interesting, really hilarious stuff on there. I highly recommend people check it out. But, there is a little entry that he has like an unnaturally hard head, and that a lot of his MMA fight, a lot of his losses, a lot of his fights that he lost were by blood loss and not because of, or because he had a cut that they couldn't get to stop bleeding, and not because he was knocked out, because he has like an exceptionally hard head. Which makes those headbutts even better, because it's just blasting people with his freak head.
Yeah, wow. Well, there you go. That's why he's was like, yeah, launching Matsunaga into the air.
Yeah, launching like, him. That was Otsuka's head is, or his headbutt is to Otsuka as the elbow is to Misawa, apparently.
Apparently, yeah. Well, I mean, it worked. And then, like, and then you get the big pro wrestling moment of, like, Otsuka gets the spike. And then gets his, like, glorious spike revenge.
See, I mean, that's the thing, is, like, when you first watched this match, you PM'd me and you said, did he die? In all capital letters. And,
that was my reaction to that match.
I assumed you were referring to Matsunaga, because Otsuka, when he finally gets the spike back, it's like he fucking puts it through his skull. Like, he hits him so hard with it. Like, how did it not go into his skull? I have no idea.
He tried to kill him back.
Like, it's like he, like, that could have gone so wrong. Because at least with Matsunaga, he's stabbing him in the head, but he's doing the short arm stab.
Yeah, the pro wrestling stab.
The pro wrestling stab, where he's clearly stabbing him in the head. Which, the pro wrestling stab. He's clearly stabbing him in the head. Yeah. But he's doing just the short arm. Otsuka is like rearing back, like punching him as hard as he can, only spike first.
Yeah. Crazy.
Just fucking brutal.
It's fucking, you know, well, to be fair, like, he was trying to kill him.
He tried to stab him in the neck.
That's all he could do, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you stab me in the neck, you try and saw my hand off, you know, and I don't blame him.
Yeah. And it's great that what Otsuka used to finish him off was probably like the quintessential pro wrestling finish for the late 90s. Is he hit him with a jackhammer and then a sharpshooter?
That was
like,
so awesome.
All we were missing was like the double fingers, and like he would have just hit everybody.
Yeah. It was just so amazing. It was the most pro wrestling thing in the whole world. That, like, after this match, after this, like, gore-filled horror movie where they literally attempt to murder each other, the finish is a pro wrestling move.
And it's so fucking awesome that the jackhammer was popularized by Goldberg as the jackhammer. So when Otsuka did it, and it was late November or late 1999 in November, so the Japanese commentators are like, "Oh, jackhammer! Yeah,
jackhammer!" Like,
which is always really fun to hear. It's like, fuck yeah, jackhammer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he puts a sharpshooter on. Unfortunately, I was gonna say, unfortunately, there's no Montreal screwjob with the sharpshooter. Although once he got it on, that ref called for the bell pretty quick.
He did. Well, I mean, but he was tapping really quick too. Like, it was just like.
Yeah, well, that's
like, I can handle being stabbed in the face, but sharpshooter, no, I'm out. I'm tapping.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. That's
the power of pro wrestling.
Yeah, the power of pro wrestling is what fucking beat the monster. And like, once
the real winner.
Once he was locked in, he knew he didn't know how to reverse it. He couldn't possibly reverse it. He doesn't have that technical skill. He's a karate fighter. He's not like a grappler.
Exactly. Yeah.
Once
Otsuka was like able to like do something, do it his way, like get some wrestling moves in, then he won. Like, you know.
And since, you know, the positioning of the sharpshooter, the way Matsunaga's body is, he can't. There's no way for him to stab. You know,
exactly.
He's facing the other way. He can't, and if he can't stab, he can't.
He
can't do shit. Yeah, there was. He did. He also tried to. I don't know if you noticed, but right after Otsuka was stabbing him in the face, Matsunaga was on the ground and he was kind of trying to ready another fireball.
I missed that.
Yeah, it's right at the end. You can actually see him like drop the lighter. I think he.
Oh wow!
He drops the lighter. Like, I don't know if he was maybe supposed to actually light another fireball, and maybe this time like it reversed, and so he fireballed himself. Yeah, exactly. Like it got countered. But it's right before he hits the jackhammer. Like, he's, like, blasting him with headbutts, and then Matsunaga drops the lighter, and then he gets jackhammered, and then sharpshooter.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think there might have been, like, one more near fireball experience, but, like, but I don't think it needed it. I think
it works either way, because, you, like, even if you, like, light it and then get reversed, or even if you're just going for it but you can't get it in before Otsuka grabs you and gets you, like, either way it works. That was, like, his last desperate attempt.
Yeah, it was all he had left.
And then he got counted and got...
Because Otsuka got the spike, and so all he had left was a fireball. And then once he dropped the lighter, and now he's in the sharpshooter, you gotta tap out.
Yeah, it's done.
Ugh. So yeah, like, this is one of those matches that, like, I would love for, like, Quentin Tarantino to watch.
I think he booked it, actually.
Yeah, exactly. I think he might have booked it. You know,
like, it was like Kill Bill in wrestling form.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those matches that, like, really transcends wrestling, and like, it's. I'm not gonna say it's something that, like, you could show a non-fan, because I don't think it's that necessarily, but like. You can show
you
it
can
to...
You can if you want them to not look at you the same way ever again.
Well, I think you could show it to certain non-fans. Like, I think, like, somebody like Quentin Tarantino would get totally into Matsunaga's whole everything.
Yeah.
Everything wrapped up with his whole experience. The vampire teeth, the coming out with the sword, that he's, like, a faux karate fighter. You know...
Yeah, turned evil and vicious with the.
But I guess it's one of those things where, like, you don't have to know these guys to like this match. Like, I didn't. Yeah, exactly. Like, you can know a little bit, but it's not like, you know, because this was part of a feud. Like, there was a Battle Arts FMW feud happening at this time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. See, I didn't even know that.
And you know, it's because it's really not important. Like, this is definitely like. One of those standalone matches where you can kind of get it right away, where one guy's coming out in the singlet and the wrestling singlet, and the other guy's coming out with like this ominous, creepy horror movie type music, carrying a sword, kicking random fans.
Yeah.
And he's got vampire teeth in. You can kind of get an idea of who these guys are, and then they certainly wrestle to that.
Oh, yeah, it's a very effective, like, styles clash match.
Yeah.
Like, it's.
And that's one of my favorite things about wrestling. Like, you know, I love styles clashes.
Yeah.
They're beautiful, whether it's the big guy versus the little guy, or the brawler versus the technician, or the veteran versus the young upstart. you know,
yeah,
or this, you know. Yeah. I love having that dichotomy of two clashing styles and see, like, not only which style is better, but, like, you know, better in a kayfabe sense, but also just in a non-kayfabe sense, just how these two artists are going to blend these two polarizing ideas together and bring us a match. And
yeah, yeah, exactly.
These two fucking guys, wow.
Oh, yeah. and to add to that, one of my favorite things about shoot style, when I watch, like, shoot style promotions, is when you get sort of an outside different element that comes into shoot style. Like, beforehand, we were talking about Vader in UWFI. And yeah. I love Vader in UWFI because he's this, like, monster, you know, heel from America coming in and throwing power bombs in the middle of a shoot fight. And I love that because it's how he deals with a shoot fight, and it's how the shoot fighters deal with, you know, a monster that big, you know. And so right. it's interesting. And so you have these two guys who basically, they're both bringing outside elements into it, because Otsuka, you know, brings his, like, suplexes and pro wrestling moves and dives to it.
Yeah.
And then Matsunaga brings all the deathmatch stuff into it, and they somehow have this match in the middle of battle arts. Like,
but, like, that's another thing that I just love so much about it.
That's the beauty of battle arts.
That's part of the charm. Yeah, and, like, that's just part of the charm of battle arts, is that it just, it's what kind of what it represented as, like, this sort of hybrid of all styles, where you've got Taka Michinoku doing, you know, springboard drop kicks, and then you've got Ishikawa and Ikeda punching each other in the face, and you've got Carl Greco. Like, it wasn't, battle arts is, you know, it's not, it's gets kind of lumped into that shoot style bucket, but it's really not. It's really just everything with this shoot style leaning to it.
Yeah. You get the sense that, like, all these people are bringing these different elements to a shoot fight, so to speak, and they're trying to find out, like, what works in a shoot fight, you know what I mean? Like, how someone can use, you know, pro wrestling moves to win a shoot fight, how someone can use dives to win a shoot fight, you know what I mean?
Like, even Ikeda, who's, like, Ikeda is about as close to shoot style, I would say, that regularly works. I mean, you know, Ishikawa as well, but, like, you think of Ikeda as really, like, a no-frills sort of guy, and he did, like, space-flying tiger drops, you know? He did fucking, like, dives out of the ring. I always think of it as, to me, it's the evolution of the very first UWF, before they went back to New Japan and obviously formed UWF2, but, like, the one with Sayama, where you would still get Sayama doing a moonsault, or you would still get the occasional Irish whip. You would get these weird, you know, you would get, trying to think of an example, like Chavo Guerrero, you know, or like, just like weird American wrestlers.
In the early UW,
when they were still trying to figure out what it was and who they wanted to be.
Yeah, because they were basically, like, inventing shoot style at that point.
Exactly. Like Cuban Assassin and Phil LaFleur, Scott McGee, you know, Pete Roberts was there. You know, all these just Marty Jones, you know, all these just, like, weird kind of, yeah, they were trying to figure out what it wanted to be. And that's sort of what Battle Art sort of embraced that, where they were like, we're going to hit each other really hard. We're going to be shooty influenced mostly, but we're not going to limit ourselves, and we'll, you know, you'll get a 6-man or an 8-man Michinoku pro style tag, with all those guys, or you'll get, you know, Victor Kruger, the just giant, like, you know, roided up dude. They weren't so committed to shoot style. And I know that a lot of people, like, you know, our buddy OJ, that's, like, his main criticism of battle arts. But to me, that's what I love the most, is that they're not so rigidly defined as the other shoot style promotions, to where you'll get to see, like, a moonsault or a fucking fireball.
I think that this sort of two different approaches to shoot to shoot style, where like one is to make it as realistic and MMA looking as humanly possible, make it look like an actual shoot and try and convince people. And some people really like that kind of aspect to it, whereas the other aspect is like taking pro wrestling and trying to make it sort of, you know, look like a real fight, I guess, but like but using pro wrestling elements.
Right.
And that's what I like about shoot style more than trying to make it as realistic as possible. But that's just me, so.
Well, I mean, the thing with that is trying to make it as realistic as possible is, I mean, there aren't that many guys who can do that. And especially not at a high level. I mean, Tamura, Volkan, Kasaka, Yamamoto, Sakuraba, that's it, you know, yes. Or some of the other rings guys, some of the other Russian rings guy. I really like Mikhail Ilyukhin. I can't pronounce his last name. But like Takada wasn't great at making fights look real. Even Fujiwara, as much as I love him, like I don't look at a Fujiwara match and think how real that looks.
Yeah.
I think a lot of their, but like my favorite stuff from those guys is that first UWF. It is that New Japan stuff where they're feuding with the New Japan guys, and it's a whole feud based around like shoot style versus pro style or whatever. But shoot style's not really shoot style yet. It's just a different style.
Like sort of.
I love it. Yeah. I love when the shoot guys get close to pro wrestling. I think it's awesome, and I think it's like some of their best stuff. I think if you look at like the best matches that are the most realistic in terms of looking like real fights, well, they're all fucking Tamura matches, because he's like the one guy that could do that and make them entertaining. For the most part. I mean, the other guys could do it too. But I think that's why more people tend to prefer the like more pro wrestling shooty stuff, and why the more hardcore shooty fans get really frustrated by that is because they don't see it as like pure or whatever. Like I totally get it from both sides, and I kind of go back and forth between both sides, because Tamura is one of my two or three favorite guys, and he's definitely the one that makes it look the most real, I think.
It's just two different approaches to the style, and it just you don't have to like one or the other. It's just
I'm never gonna be like, I could never possibly criticize something like Alexander Otsuka because he does a giant swing, and so therefore it's not real enough. It's like, then you're missing the point.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, it's not real, you know?
Like, yeah. Like, no, the fact that he wrestles the way he does, and then he also does a giant swing, like, that's what makes him awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's not, that's what makes him not awesome. No, you're doing it wrong.
Relax.
Yeah, exactly.
Relax, it's fake. But, yeah.
All right. So we're kind of going off the rails, but it's kind of because I'm trying to avoid talking about our next match.
Well, too bad, because we're going to talk about it. for doing this with me.
I was trying to kill time until you had to go to work.
Until I forgot about the other match.
Damn it.
we'll take a break here, and then we will come back and talk about Elliot's new favorite match.
Yes.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only feed, and of course, the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Placement Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlacementNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Placement Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Placement Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name. Now it will be known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we're back. And now for the fun part of the episode, where we talk about the match I chose for this show, which is a TNA match, which is the Motor City Machine Guns versus Generation Me, aka the Young Bucks, in TNA, which was aired on Reaction on November 18th, 2010. TNA.
So it actually took me two viewings to realize that it was the Young Bucks, because of the shitty camera work and the fact that it was like a cell phone taping of a screen, and just not being so familiar with the Bucks that I was going to recognize them under that, under those circumstances. And then when I realized
that... they gave them that name in TNA when they went by Generation Me. And
yeah.
So yeah, I should have mentioned that it was the Young Bucks.
Because I actually do like the Young Bucks, sort of, somehow, like, kind of. Like, just the little bit that I've seen, they're like... I don't know, I can't really explain it, but like, they're like... I enjoy watching them do ridiculous, way over the top, stupid matches. I don't know what it is, but they're my kind of crazy somehow.
Yeah,
they hit the spot.
Yeah, like if you're gonna do that, then do it the way the Young Bucks do it. Like they can get away with it, you know.
Right, exactly.
They're the ones, yeah. So yeah. I should probably explain
myself. So you pick this match instead.
I should probably explain myself, because this was after you showed me your match, and so I changed my match too, and wanted to, you know, because I was so traumatized by, like, attempted murder, that, like, I wanted to pick something that reminded me of, like, not similar, but, like, reminded me of violence and of, like, brutality, and, like, the main reason that I chose this, and the main reason I like it so much is that, like, it's brutality that comes from, like, the most unexpected place. Like, here is the TNA. Young Bucks. Well, TNA, first of all.
Oh,
like,
the Young Bucks.
Yeah, that yeah. too. But, like, but yeah, TNA, as well as, like, the fact that it's the Young Bucks and it's the Machine Guns, you know, it's Sabin and Shelley. And, like, these are, like, the biggest flippy-doos to ever flippy-do. And, like... they, you know, and they go here and just have this completely violent, sort of intense war in the middle of TNA, you know? And so it's just the fact that it was so starkly different to what you're used to seeing from them.
they still got some flippy-doo stuff in, and it wasn't, like, outrageous. It
worked in the context
of the match, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like, and, yeah, because, I mean, like, for some context, like...
Yeah, I feel like that's gonna be a big help, is a little context.
Well, I guess, but not really, because there's really not much context as to why they're having this match in particular.
God damn it.
Like, it's not like Lawler and Funk, where they, like, have a whole thing and promos and all this, and then build up to the showdown in the empty arena. It's just, they
were like, hey, nobody bought tickets tonight, let's have an empty arena match.
An empty arena match, aka every TNA match. But but no, but like the Bucks debuted in TNA, I think at the start of the year, when everything changed and they got all these new people in. The Bucks debuted and they had the most flippy-doo match that's ever been aired on television with the guns. And they, like, because they were both babyface teams, and they just did, like, all the flips they could think of in, like, 4 minutes on Impact. And anyway, and then they sort of separated, and then by the end of the year they started feuding, like, actually feuding. And then the Bucks turned heel. I keep calling them the Bucks. Like, they were called Generation Me, but it's the Bucks. The Bucks turned heel, I think, maybe, like, a month or so before this. And then they really started feuding. And literally, the build to this match, I will tell you the build to this match, because I had to look it up. On Impact, the same night, because Reaction was a show that aired after Impact. It was the Impact post-show.
Okay.
That night on Impact, they had a mixed tag, like, with some girls, and the Bucks won. I think they won after, like, cheating. I think they sprayed that was the girl who had the hairspray gimmick. I can't even remember her name in TNA. And they, like, sprayed someone in the face and pinned them, and that's why they won the match. And so they went backstage, and the Guns challenged the Bucks to an empty arena match tonight later on Reaction. That was the build to this match. Welcome so to TNA. Like, so I think more than
we
anything...
We challenge you to a match, but not until everybody leaves?
Yeah. We don't want anyone to witness this.
How pissed would you be if you're a fan and, like, wanted to see that match?
Yeah, you're watching Impact and you're like, oh man, it'd be great to see that. And then they're
these
like,
these are my favorite
arena.
Two guys. Yeah. No, you have to leave. And then we'll start.
We're gonna
the
wait
match.
Till you leave, guys. Yeah. Well,
we're gonna wait till you leave, and then we're gonna turn the lights off.
Oh yeah, but that's and I can explain the sort of the production of it because and I
you can
think I can sort
oh,
of
oh good okay
not excuse it but explain it maybe
okay oh fair enough
the. This was on Reaction, and this was when Reaction was a short-lived show that I think was cancelled by the end of the year, but it was a post-show that they started doing after Impact. It would air on Spike after Impact. And it was sort of very different to what you expect out of TNA, or even out of WWE, like out of mainstream wrestling, because it was just a show full of interviews, mm-hmm. and they would basically just go around interviewing everyone about what happened that night on Impact. But they would shoot it, like, in that sort of, like, shaky cam, realistic kind of feel. Like, that's what they were going for, like, a realistic thing where, like, they'd have, like, the shaky cam and they're, like, going in and out of focus and that sort [S2] Right. [S1] Of thing where it looked real. And the interviews they were doing with the wrestlers, they made that look like shoot interviews, you know? Like, you were just – like, Tommy Dreamer was just standing there backstage, like, just chatting. It wasn't a wrestling promo. It was just, like, he was just, like, giving an interview as if it was real. And it was very, like, novel for the time and for what they were going for. Like, it was very unique compared to what was on television at the time, you know. And part of what they did to push Reaction, to get people to watch Reaction, was that they would actually hold over the main event of Impact into Reaction. Like, you'd be watching Impact, and then, like, the end of the show would come, and they'd say, to see the finish of this match, keep watching TNA Reaction. And then they'd, like, start Reaction and continue the main event. And have the finish of the main event to get people to watch. Like, thankfully, it was airing on the same channel, like, on television. But, I mean, for, like, can you imagine, like, international viewers who don't have Reaction coming on after Impact, they're just cutting out the main event halfway through. And the show just ends.
That's such a fucking, like, old carny, like, Bill Watsy thing to do that it's just so funny that they're doing it, like, leading into their kayfabe breaking show.
Yeah, and like, but I mean, for anyone not in America, you couldn't actually see the finish of the main event because you didn't get Reaction. So like,
isn't that primarily TNA's audience? Isn't it primarily an international audience?
Yeah, their main audience is in the UK, and then they couldn't see the finish of the main event, like, and yeah, and oh, so it's so TNA. But the point, TNA. Yeah, but so that was the kind of show they were going for, like a sort of realistic interview show.
Okay, that's cool, but and that actually does kind of. That makes the filming and everything make more sense.
Yeah,
I would say
it explains the filming because they basically just filmed it the same way they filmed interviews. You know, like they'd have some guy like walking down a hallway and find a wrestler and start talking to them, like just holding the camera. You know, like it was like that. So when they like, and like, yeah, there was never any wrestling on the show apart from like the main event finishes of Impact. There was like, I think this was probably the first actual match that they did on Reaction. Maybe the only match they ever did on the show, specifically on the show. So yeah, and that explains why. So when they come out for this match, it's basically just like the cameramen from Reaction just coming out into the arena and just following them around trying to film it.
Right.
You know, and that's what they were going for. Like it was a deliberate thing. Like, I mean, it misses in certain respects because it is dark and you can't see a lot of shit. And a lot of shit is out of the frame. And, I mean, you know, so you get stupid shit. Like, you're missing action because you're watching one pairing and not another. Or, like, when
the guns did this whole big double tope.
And you completely miss it because the camera's out of position.
Yeah.
So that in that sense, it was stupid. Like it was like they were too ambitious for their own good kind of thing when they were like for what they were going for because you just end up missing stuff. But
I would say my favorite part of the match was when Taz described our view, just the close up camera angle, as a bird's eye view, which
isn't really true.
It's not even true at all.
That word doesn't mean what you think it means.
it doesn't mean you're super close.
No, it means birds are on top.
Birds are above.
Birds are above.
They're above. fucking Taz.
Yeah, speaking of Taz, like it was the same thing with the commentary. Like it wasn't like a normal match where they just had they were trying to make it seem real where like this match started and someone was like, "Hey, Taz and Mike, come and like and do some voiceovers for this match so people know what's going on." Like, and they didn't like call it like a match. They just sat there like as if they were actual people just watching it going, "Whoa, that must have hurt. Whoa, that guy just killed him," you know, like so just trying to get over the concept, I guess, was why they were there commentating. I found it a bit distracting by the end that they had commentary at all.
Yeah, me too.
Probably would have been better for what they were going for to just have no commentary.
Either have normal commentary the whole way through or don't have it at all.
Yeah.
I think one or the other would have been fine. I would not have been sad if there was more consistent commentary to distract me from the very heavy breathing.
that's one of those matches, and it reminds me of like modern day battle arts, like modern in that regard, because there's no commentary, and so like literally all you hear is guys just like groaning and screaming and panting and
yeah,
and especially in this match because they're close up and you can hear them yelling at each other. So, like, you have guys just going, like, "Oh, you want more, huh? We'll give you more.
Break his freaking neck.
Ugh.
You guys want to fight? You've got to fight."
And then, oh, fuck. And I'm just thinking, I hope no one's walking past listening to me watching this.
No, exactly. Yep.
And I think that when I watch like modern Japanese shoot style matches where like all you can hear is just these Japanese guys going,
ugh. Yeah, exactly. Oh shit.
I swear it's just wrestling. It's just wrestling. The door's open, you can see it, it's wrestling. Like again, it's like it's sort of like we're laughing about it and it's sort of comical in one sense, but it also like if you buy into it, I guess, like, it did make it feel kind of...
Oh,
like,
totally, yeah.
I mean, it's dangerous, you know, because you can hear them, like, screaming and groaning, like, with every shot they take, and you can hear every shot.
Yeah.
Like, every, like, thing just gets nailed, and you can hear the slap when they get hit, and you can, like, hear them, like, squishing on the floor and stuff, and it's just like, you know, it, like, the main number one thing I like about the match in general is that these guys were killing each other with flips.
Right.
Like, that's what I like about it. Like, the fact that, like, because these guys, this is what they do. They're, like, little flippy dudes who, like, go out and do all these dives and flips and, like, crazy, you know, stuff. And so when they get into this, like, heated feud and they want to go have a brawl, even when nobody's even looking, they still...
They're still doing it. Yeah, they're still parkouring.
You know, and it makes sense because, like, if you change your style, if you're really trying to kill them and you suddenly change your style and start brawling and punching them, it's like, well, are you saying that your actual moves don't hurt people? You know what I mean?
Right, exactly,
so it's like, it's great to me that they do that, where it's like, I am going to kill you with my flips because my flips fucking hurt, you know?
Right.
Like, I will hurt you with my moves because they're dangerous and, like, and that's why I do them, you know? That's why I use them in every match, because I'm trying to win and they hurt people, you know? Like,
right.
It reminds me of Bully Ray and AJ Styles had that big Last Man Standing match, I think it was, in TNA. And
I can't remember if I watched that or not. I'm pretty sure I did.
It's
I'm
like good. 90% it's good. You should
sure
watch
that
it.
That. Yeah.
I recommend it. But like, they're having this, like, crazy intense brawl, and they're doing the whole nine yards. Like, AJ's doing, like, the Tommy Dreamer thing, like, getting hit and saying, you know, please, sir, can I have more? Like, he was actually, like, sort of aping that spot.
Yeah.
And so they're, like, getting the shit beat out of him. And then when AJ makes his comeback, he makes his comeback, like, with dives and flips and all of AJ's offense. And I thought it was fucking great because, like, it just shows you, like, this is why he is a flippy dude, because his flips are effective and they hurt people. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And so, yeah, so that's the main thing I like about the match itself, is that the idea that these guys are actually killing each other with flips, and it shows, they tried to make these flips look as dangerous and hurty as possible. And that's, and again, with the close-up filming and the sound, you can hear every shot just, like, hit these guys so hard. And you can see, you know, see the impact of the flips of every, you know, dive and every kick and all this sort of stuff that they're doing. And you can, you know, and you can hear them react, hear them, like, screaming in pain and stuff from them, you know. And so, and, like, all of that together, it just... I felt like it was sort of a really effective way of, like, showing people that... Because when you see the flips, you're like, oh, flips, you know, like, as if it's...
Right, yeah, it's more...
Like they're fireworks and stuff. Ooh, ah, but, like...
Right,
Underneath, like, it's a match and you're trying to win a match, and the point has to be that your flips hurt the other guy, you know? And so I think it was really effective at, like, showing the actual violence of flippy moves.
Right. And, like, and I definitely see that too in the match. Like, there's that, like, assisted neck breaker, where one guy's doing a neck breaker and then the other guy hits a plancha and puts him through the table.
Yeah.
Which is, like, a really creative spot. But granted, like, for me, I thought they took way too long to set that up. I thought it was kind of, like, precarious, like, you know, they're delicately balancing on this table. Like, why don't you just shove them off of you? you know, so,
well,
sort
I mean,
of thing.
Well, I mean, it was towards the end, so I can buy that, like, he was selling and, you know.
Right,
but, yeah. But I get the point that, yeah, they took a long time to get there.
That doesn't really bother me so much in a lot of matches, like, taking a long time to, like, set things up. But in a... like, wild, out-of-control brawl like that, it bothers me when it takes forever to set things up. Just because it's more reactionary, like, matches like this, where you're just, like, getting walloped and having to react to it. We talked about the lights and everything. It didn't make any sense to me. That was the first thing I wrote. Why didn't they turn the lights on? you know, so... My biggest complaint, and it's kind of dumb, I'll admit it, but fuck it, whatever. My biggest complaint, honestly, is that there's been, what, 3 empty arena matches ever? And, okay, my 2 biggest complaints. And this is, this actually works, that setup for both of them.
Mm.
you know, there's been three empty arena matches ever. The first two had four of the best talkers in the history of wrestling. You know, Lawler and Funk, and then Foley and Rock. Like, just so talking means a lot in a match like this, especially where there's like limited commentary, there's no crowds, you can hear everything that they're saying.
Yeah, the whole point is that you're close up and you can hear what they're saying. And, yeah.
So when it's just like, we're gonna fucking kill him, you wanna break his neck? Come on, let's break his neck. Like, it seemed kind of corny to me.
Yeah, for
sure. And like, they aren't good enough actors for me to really buy it, whereas I could buy Terry Funk trying to stab Jerry Lawler in the eye, and then Terry Funk going, oh my eye, you know, like, I totally believe that he took a spike in the eye. This just felt like really, really forced aggression in terms of, like, the language. And so that kind of, like, you know, four of the best talkers in wrestling history, and then the third one has the Young Bucks. you know, like,
it's a step down, you can't deny.
Yeah, it's a step down. And then my other thing that I really didn't appreciate, and I felt that I was misled by the fact that it was an empty arena match, and they didn't fucking brawl around the arena. What the hell? They stayed around ringside the whole fucking time. So what was the point?
Knock some damn chairs over, would you?
Yeah! I want somebody getting thrown upside down into a bunch of chairs.
Like, what are we doing here?
What are you guys doing? You know, you're going under the ring to get a table out from underneath it when you have thousands of chairs all around you. Like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
That was like, and you know, it's like a stupid critique of the match, but like I honestly felt like the whole time I'm like waiting for them to, like, you know, explore the arena a little bit.
They couldn't see where they were going.
Because they didn't turn the lights on.
They need to light the light from their phones to.
to that I would say, Satanico and Sangrich Kata brawled into a dark crowd in 1989 Mexico. So there.
to that I will say, the Young Bucks are not Satanico and Sangrich Kata.
Then the show has been a success.
Just to make that clear. I can admit it.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
I mean, that, like, just when I think of empty arena matches, you know, the two of them that there are, and really when I think of an empty arena match, I think of Flair Funk, or I think of Funk Lawler. I don't necessarily think of Rock and Foley. Oh, you know, later on I'm like, oh yeah, that one too, with the stupid camera
on
the forklift.
I've never seen that match.
Oh, really?
I haven't actually watched it, no.
I've
read about it in Foley's book, so I feel like I've watched it, but I haven't actually watched it.
Yeah, you should definitely watch it. It's a really entertaining match. The final spot where it's the cameras on the forklift is ridiculous, but
Yeah,
there's no defending it. I was going to say, like, yeah, it was the Super Bowl, and so they were trying to reach a wider audience. But, like, it's terrible.
You're just making it off. Like, yeah.
Yeah, but with that one, it was definitely a different approach. I mean, it was definitely more of a comedy match where, God, that match is just so Memphis-influenced. Because, I mean, not only is it empty arena, but they go up into the kitchen, and they're hitting each other with jars of mustard and shit like that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very Memphis inspired, but it's definitely more of a comedy match. It doesn't have the violence of Funk Lawler, and it doesn't have the violence of this one either. But it does have, God, Foley even bumps down the stairs in that match, a la Jerry Lawler.
Yeah,
that whole match is like an homage to Memphis. Yeah. I should rewatch it now that like I love Memphis.
There we go.
Yeah, because I don't think I've seen it, like, probably since it aired, honestly. But yeah, it's definitely worth watching. Just a different sort of empty arena match. But, like, when you're doing an empty arena match, it's you're ripping off Flair, or God, I keep saying Flair, you're ripping off Funk and Lawler. It's not Foley and Rock that's like they got this thing started.
Yeah.
So I needed that brawling into the stands. To me, that's like a staple of. It would be like if they had a barbed wire match and didn't throw anybody into the barbed wire. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, like, why is it there? Yeah.
Well, yeah, why is it there if you're not going to take advantage of it?
Yeah, no, yeah, I get that.
And you know, with these guys, with their flippy new moves, like, they could have done some cool shit around the arena.
Mm, yeah.
You know, theoretically.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, it was a missed opportunity in a way to do more with it.
Yeah.
But I think they eschewed that instead to do like the close up nitty gritty, you know, badly shot, dark, you know, kind of thing. So they didn't want to like get too sort of fancy with it, I guess, by actually going and doing flips off whatever and all this sort of stuff. They just kept it tight and kept it like in one place, I guess.
Right. But I guess my point is they could have just had that match with fans. And it probably would have been better because there would have been fans reacting to it, and you wouldn't have had to hear like the shitty talking. you know what I'm saying?
Like, let's break his neck.
Yeah, let's break his neck. It was like they were all Cobra Kai. Like I kept waiting for somebody to say, "Put him in a body bag, Johnny." Like, you know, sweep the fucking leg.
Yeah.
Yeah, those were my real, like, it wasn't bad. I mean, they were certainly it was intense. I totally agree that they worked their flippy spots in well, and it made sense for them to use them. I just thought, you know, it's fucking TNA. They can't do anything right. It was poorly lit, which certainly hurt the match, because, you know, and poorly shot, because you missed major important things, but also just booking a fucking empty arena match, not going around the arena is yeah, I feel like that was like false advertising.
Yeah. No, fair enough. Yeah. Yeah, it's like,
and there was no blood. Like, what the hell? You can't, like, this is also partially your fault. Because because
it's all my fault.
It's all your fault. We watched the Matsunaga match, and you were like, "Oh my god, did he die? Like, is that, there's blood? Holy shit!"
And then I was like, "Here."
And then
this?
You're like, "You gotta watch this instead." And it's like,
it's like a sanitized like WWE PG version of an empty arena match.
They're like, "Let's get him, buddy."
Let's kill him, guys.
Come on, Shelly, let's get him. It's just like, are you fucking kidding me?
We're gonna break your neck.
Because like that's something that I like in the little bit of TNA that I've seen, I have seen like some bloody fucking matches. So I just kinda assume that there would be a lot of blood.
Yeah, it's blood. Now that you mention that, it's like it didn't really occur to me before. I guess because of the way that they were working it, because it's not like they were punching each other in the head or using weapons or doing things that would result in blood. They were using like dives and things like that, where they are not necessarily going to bust you open, I guess would be the rationale. But yeah, but no, I agree. Now that you've said that, I'm like, yeah, it was very sort of sanitized for such an intense brawl. Like, you know, like, well, brawl is sort of a misnomer, because they weren't brawling, they were just having a fight with wrestling moves kind of thing. Like, it's
I think we're both actually kind of overselling how flippy it was, because it really wasn't. I mean,
when I say flippy, like, I mean, a lot of the offense was like super kicks
Yeah, and I mean, there are definitely like some hard forearms, some hard like punches to the back, and stuff like that. And like, it's, there were probably like maybe 4 or 5 quote unquote flippy spots in the whole match.
Which isn't
that many.
No, like, I guess like my point in calling it like that is that like they were basically just using their normal offense,
right?
That they would normally use in a match, like they. Like the neckbreaker crossbody scene that they did through the table, like that was actually the gun's finish.
Right. Oh, okay.
Like they would do it in the ring, like off the throat, but like that was their finish. And like Shelley used the his sliced bread move on the guardrail, you know, they would, and yeah, and they would do all their moves, like the double super kicks, and you know, and the Bucks did, you know, the face buster, the springboard face buster, and the DDTs and stuff like that. Like, but yeah, but it was basically like their offense that they would use in a normal match instead of like sort of changing up and doing like this wild brawling, even though they were having a...
The Bucks had an awesome spot where one guy's putting on a Boston Crab and the other one puts on a camel clutch, only instead of putting on a camel clutch, he's choking him with a belt. And that fucking ruled.
Yeah, and that was good.
And then that led to the other... God, I can't remember who was in the submission, but that led to his partner coming in, and he had a belt too, and he fucking whipped the shit out of the box with that belt. Some of the hardest belt shots that you've seen. I mean, so this definitely did have the violence to it. I think there were some missed opportunities.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
More than anything else. And, like, They don't speak like Terry Funk. Or
they do not. And and there was some other cool stuff. Like, I liked how, like, at the point where the Bucks were like, let's break his fucking neck.
And, give him a body bag!
And they were hanging they were hanging him over the ropes, like from the apron, like from the outside, to do whatever the fuck they were going to do. And then Saban comes in with the save and like jumps on the ropes and dives over the top rope and crossbodies both of them to like make
the save.
That was a great
spot, yeah.
You know, so like even when like some guy's running in to break up, you know, the double team move, he's still doing it like with a dive, you know? Like it's just they can't help but do anything else, you know? Like
I mean that was a great spot. And I mean honestly it makes sense because in that situation this is for Matt D. A dive is more efficient, right?
Yeah,
there,
it's the fastest way to get over the rope.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, it makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, and I mean, and I liked isn't the right word, but the finish. Like, I mean, like we're talking about how hammy they are when they're talking and stuff. But I mean, there's a point, because they get Matt Jackson in the ring. I can't remember what his TNA name was, but like Matt Jackson, they get him in the ring and like tie his hands behind his back on the turnbuckle, and he's like just defenseless, kneeling there, waiting to be killed. And the guns are just standing there, going, "We're gonna fucking kill you! Like we are going to kill you!" And it's so like, and then they start super kicking him so hard in the face with his hands behind his back, like defenseless. And I think the first time I watched the match and now that I'm rewatching it, I get the same feeling where it's just like, have I accidentally clicked on like some sort of weird hardcore, like extreme, like rape porn thing?
Yeah, that was the impression that I got.
You know, it gets, because after you've watched them like heavy breathing and groaning and shit for like 10 minutes and then they like,
and they're like, let's tie him up.
Have you had enough? Bang. Like, you know, you want some more? Bang. You know, and it's just like, this is getting kind of like harrowing in a sense. Like, what am I watching here?
Like, when they were like tying him up and like talking shit to him, I was like, that to me, I was like, it definitely made me feel uncomfortable, which is weird because,
it's uncomfortable.
I've always loved, like, the Dump Matsumoto, Chigusa, Nagoya matches. And, like, I know that people, especially Dylan Hales, has pointed out that, like, you know, that match makes him uncomfortable. It reminds him of rape culture. And I'm like, that doesn't even occur to me. Like, that had never occurred to me before when I watched that match. And that was totally kind of where I went when I watched this. I was like, oh, this is uncomfortable.
It's just getting, like, a little bit close to like, you know, like, yeah, like actual rape. Like, it's like you wouldn't be like, at that point you wouldn't be surprised if they just like sort of like started raping him, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's what it was like, that's what it felt like. It was just kind of like,
and maybe that wouldn't have happened had it not taken them fucking forever to actually tie him up. I don't know if they have never tied a knot before or what.
Well, I think he was using a belt. Like, I think I don't know whose belt it was, because I think they both wore, like, belts with their tights. But, like, someone's belt got taken, and then he was using it to whip him with during the match.
Yeah.
I think he got the belt and then tried to actually buckle the belt, like,
hands
and shit. So he's probably, like, just fiddling with the buckle, I imagine.
Yeah. I mean, that was the other thing, is, like, the finish made me uncomfortable for the reasons that we talked about.
Yeah.
But then also just, like, it took forever. I thought it took a long time to set up. I thought it looked shitty. Not that it didn't look like they weren't kicking him in the face. Like, super kicks look great. Can't deny that. But just, like, the way his fucking arms were, and then the fact that, like, when it came time for the third and final super kick, the double one, you could see that he was just holding his hands up there. Like, the belt wasn't even on anymore.
Yeah.
It had come off. So I was just like, that whole end kind of took me out of it, where I was just like, all right,
why didn't he move yet?
Yeah, exactly. And, well, like, I know why he didn't move, but
yeah,
it's just, they took that long, and that's how it ended up looking at the end of it. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
Although, I will say, after being a total negative Nancy this whole time, one thing that I forgot to mention, the missed plancha, where they set the table up really quick on his side, and one of the Young Bucks, that was fucking great. That was an awesome spot, super creative. They timed it really well. The selling was really great. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
There was definitely, like, an, oh, my ribs!
Yeah, because, yeah, he just kind of,
like,
out
my hair.
Yeah.
It looked awesome. Looked awesome.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's set up really, because even the spot before that where the guns get the table out and then the Young Buck does the baseball slide and kicks the table into them.
That was really good, too, because that was, like, the guns were making their starting to make their comeback, and they were like, you want a fight, we'll give you a fight. And I'm like laughing to myself, because like these guys think giving you a fight means like going and pulling a folding table out from underneath
and setting up the furniture, yeah.
Yeah, instead of like pulling out brass knucks and hitting them in the face or something, you know?
Yeah. Modern wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. Fucking modern wrestling.
Get the tapes.
I'll get you a fight. Let me go get some plunder.
Yeah, let me just do some decorating first.
Let me see what's under this.
Just hang on a sec.
Just hang on a sec. I'll be right with
you. Right there. Don't move.
I'll be right with you. But yeah, that said, much as we make fun of it, I thought, yeah, the baseball slide, and it made sense because that he got the baseball slide because they were fucking taking too long getting the table.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then that's why, like, and then sort of they got squished under the table, and that's why they were sort of, like, getting out from under the table.
Right, exactly.
And pushed the table up onto its side, and then when the Young Buck came out, they moved, and then that's why he went into the table the way it was, because they were just sort of, like, trying to pick themselves up, and that's, you know. So it was very well, like, set up.
And it was such a nasty spot and such a unique spot. It worked
Table
really well as it was brutal. That might have been the most brutal match of the whole spot. I just thought it worked really well as like the kind of momentum swinging transition early on to get the machine guns back on offense.
I like that too. It was that was a good sort of period of the match.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I just realized?
What?
I'm pretty sure we were talking about reaction before and what they were doing with the show. The interviews that they were doing were, like, mostly kayfabe. I say mostly because especially in the beginning, they also were kind of flirting with guys like saying shoot things on this show. And it was like the Hulk Hogan, Bischoff, and you know, and so they're all getting off with, like, oh, this is a shoot, brother, and, like, and I'm pretty sure it was this exact same episode where earlier in the show, Hulk Hogan did this shoot promo on Reaction, and he got in trouble for, because he did this, like, insane, like, shoot promo where he, like, buried the whole company, buried everyone, and said, and was basically saying, I don't give a shit about kayfabe and winning fake titles, brother, and all this. Like, he literally said fake title belts. And because he was trying to bury the Dudleys for, like, because they just won the tag titles or some shit. You know? And you just, and he got in, and because it was, like, by this point, because Hogan came in January, this was November, Hogan had long stopped giving a shit.
Yeah.
It didn't take long for him to check out. So, yeah, but he was, like, the general manager or some shit on it, like, at the time. And, yeah, for whatever reason, he was cutting this promo and just started burying everyone, saying, it's all about drawing, brother, if you don't draw money. And so he was just burying everyone in TNA for not drawing, you know, like, and then just burying the Dudley, saying, who gives a shit about your fake title wins, brother? And, like, just, and it's just like, and he's like, this is your public face of this company.
Yeah.
And he's burying everyone.
Not only that, but it's Hulk's entire life and profession and career too. Like, don't forget, like, you're in this fucking business too, buddy.
Yeah. You know, who gives a shit about fake titles, brother? Like, you fucking did, you know?
You did. Yeah.
Everyone did. You know, but you just, like, it's just, like, the most cliched old man Hogan promo, like, just burying everyone for not being a draw and, you know, not making money and, like, just all this. And it was just, like, oh, man. You know, he is just, he's checked out, he's gone. But, and this is the guy that they're sending on to, like talk shows to represent the company and shit, and he just does not give a single shit. Like, this was at the time, like, when Hogan was in TNA, it was hilarious, because, like, he'd go on talk shows and he'd get all these great, like, spots in the media. And he would never mention TNA. He would talk about his own reality show or, like, whatever he was doing, this and that. And he just would never mention TNA. And that people were just, like, it was driving people crazy. That, like, he was, like, he came in to help TNA and compete with WWE and all this. And then he was just, like, not even bothering to try and, like, promote them in any way. And he would just say, then he would say dumb shit like that on their actual television, like on their own television show. He's standing there burying everyone in sight, and it was just, and he's the, you know, and he's in charge. It's just like, oh man, like TNA everyone.
We're sure he didn't run for president.
Have we ever seen Trump and Hogan in the same room?
This sounds familiar. They definitely have the they go to the same tanning salon, yeah, and they have the same hairdresser.
There are many similarities.
Like, this shit sounds like
yeah,
really familiar just, right now.
Hogan was Trump before Trump was Trump. Like, just such a fucking carny, but like only to benefit Hogan. Like, it's like, the minute he was in TNA, he was just like, well, I'm the real star, and all these jabronis can just get fucked, brother. Like, you know, like.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
He just did not give a shit. I swear to God, it was like, it was the same episode. That happened, and then later on, this match happened. Like, so it was a memorable episode of Reaction, anyway. I think probably the only one.
It looks like, you know, it's a highly regarded match for sure. You know, me being a negative Nancy aside, like, you know, nowhere that I ever journey to on the internet wrestling world. Ah. Oh, shit. Sorry, everybody. I was trying to get back to the video, obviously, just to look at some of, like, the YouTube comments, because they're all, like, super popular. And granted, yeah, like, YouTube comments, that's, like, the bottom of the barrel, but it goes well with TNA, which is also, like, the bottom of the barrel.
Well, but, TNA are the YouTube comments of wrestling.
Yeah, it's like they're meant to go together. But, I mean, all the comments are, like, extremely physical, one of the greatest matches ever. You know.
Yeah, and it's not a match I hear talked about often. Like, yeah, I don't often see it discussed. But, like, when people do bring it up, it's because they like it. And they're, yeah, like, check out this match.
I had never heard of this match, was never aware of it.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I think that's because, okay, like, it aired on Reaction, you know? Like, it wasn't even on Impact or anything. Like, and it was, like, an empty arena match. It wasn't, like, a proper match, you know? Like, they didn't even have a ref or anything, obviously. But, and so, yeah. I mean, it's one of those where it's, like, is it really a match? And so it sort of just gets buried compared to, like, some of the more, you know, famous box matches or famous guns matches, you know? Like, or even famous TNA matches. Because like they had a lot of matches in TNA as well. Like, because they did like what's the TNA TLC match, like Full Metal Mayhem. Like, they had one of them on pay per view. They had an Ultimate X match. You know, they had a lot of like pay per view matches that I think are probably more remembered by, like, you know, fans of TNA, I guess, than this one. But I just I've always liked it ever since I saw it, because just because it's so unique in this setting, like.
Right. Well, I would say that if you're like a hardcore fan of either of these teams, it's not going to be because of their hard-hitting physical brawls like this. So when you're talking about like their best performances and stuff like that, this 10-minute empty arena brawl isn't necessarily going to come to your mind when you like these dudes because they're high flyers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so also,
the shuffle.
The same year, 2010, was when the Guns had that big feud with Beer Money. They had the best of five series over the tag titles with Beer Money, and that was like at the time that was like a really like sort of highly regarded thing, and they had a lot of great matches with Beer Money. And so I think even in the context of like TNA in 2010, like, this, people don't think about that as much as they think about the Beer Money matches that the Guns had. So. Yeah, it just sort of gets buried. It just doesn't get talked about a lot, but it's one of my sort of favorite sort of tucked away matches, even from TNA, you know.
Right.
I've always disliked TNA, and I've always, whenever I watched it, I hate watched it and took great pleasure in doing so, because it's, you know, it's just a piece of shit company most of the time. Like, not lately, I haven't watched it in years, so I'm not talking about now. Apparently now it's sort of a good wrestling show in a vacuum, but I mean, just in its heyday, like, it was just, you know, just terrible for the most part even when I was watching it. And so, but at the same time, every now and then they do have like a really good match that they put on, and they often don't get the credit that they deserve because they happen in TNA and people don't want to watch them or don't want to, you know, give them the time of day. But there are some really good matches in TNA, and I think this is one of them.
There's that Dave Meltzer talking point where a 4-star match in WWE is like a 3-star match at the Tokyo Dome.
Oh.
And that's just every TNA match.
Every TNA match, loses a star for being in TNA.
Yeah, a 4-star match in TNA is actually 2.5 stars. Because of the presentation and commentary and
excited
ring.
There's so many things working against it. That's why, like, when you look at a run like AJ Styles' run in TNA, it just, the degree of difficulty is so much higher because of what he's, like, swimming against to have all these good matches.
Yeah, so, like, when something like AJ versus Abyss happens, it's like, whoa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How did this happen?
Yeah, to me, this is one of the good ones. This is probably one of my favorite TNA matches, if I thought about it. So, yeah, so that's why I chose. And again, it was like the most violent match in a way that you wouldn't expect, I guess, on paper match. And that's sort of why I chose it more than anything else. Because that's how I felt about, like, the Battle Arts match. Because, like, the Battle Arts match was violent in a way that I didn't expect. Because, like, it wasn't sort of a Battle Arts match. It was, you know, like, it was what we got. You know, it was, like a death match instead that just happened to take place there. So, like, yeah, this match is sort of the same. It was, like, this sort of, like, violent, you know, poorly lit, you know, brawl in a dark room somewhere that happened to take place in TNA. You know, like, on a mainstream US wrestling company. Like,
mainstream in
quotations. Well, you know, at the time it was like the big two, like, sure. Didn't last for much longer after that, but you know what I mean, like, it, you
spoken
know.
Spoken by somebody who did not live through the Monday Night Wars.
No TNA was like, was number two in name only, you know, because there was nothing else. But yeah, But the way they presented the shows and everything, you know what I mean? Like it.
Oh yeah, I'm just messing with you.
Yeah, I know.
It's definitely like it's a match worth watching because of who they are and how they're working. You know, it's not what you expect when you think of a Young Bucks match, but it's also not really what you expect when you think of an empty arena match. And I think that's
true too.
Yeah, and I think that was my biggest issue with it is like they had so much more room for activities and they didn't take advantage of it. So it's like, why even build those bunk beds?
Exactly. Yeah, that's fair enough. We got through our first differing opinions on a match without.
Yeah, everybody was looking forward to it.
Yeah, but I think we did it so nicely. They'll probably be disappointed.
I think so too. I mean, they didn't know that, you know, you're Australian, so you're really nice. You're not going to be mean, and I'm not going to just be a dick on the podcast. At least not to you. I'll be mean to like people who can't fight back.
one day I'm gonna show you like, you know, some like Kelly match that's so bad that you're just gonna come on and be like, what the fuck was this, Dace?
Well, the great thing about that, like, that's the thing, is like it's only gonna be like 4 minutes.
You can't even get mad at a Kelly. Oh yeah, it'd have to be some sort of half an hour abomination.
Yeah, exactly.
But she doesn't have those.
It's gonna be when I make you watch like a 30-minute like Akira Maeda match or something like that.
Oh fucking! I don't like Maeda. That'll work. That'll do it. I sat through Maeda versus Andre the Giant when they're not cooperating with each other and don't even do it. Yeah. Oh, that was the worst shit I've ever seen in wrestling. Like, that's truly horrid. Like,
yeah,
Maeda.
When he didn't want to fuck with you, he did not. He did not at all.
It's just, oh yeah, oh fuck Maeda. I don't like that guy.
All right, I'm gonna start YouTube.
Oh god, now I have to watch a Maeda match.
I gotta get you back for the empty arena match with the arena brawling.
This is fair. This is fair.
Good. Now I know who to
You found my weakness.
I found it. I mean, because it's like, yeah, it's Tanaka, Kyoshi Tamura. Those guys are awesome.
Yeah.
But,
no, I like those guys. You can't get to that.
Exactly. And I like Akira Maeda.
Yeah. Give me Maeda or like Ikeda versus Shikara or something. Like something. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I totally, like, as somebody who really likes Akira Maeda, I understand not liking him.
Yeah.
He is an interesting fellow.
Oh, speaking of Kelly.
Christ. Words that have never been said before.
Akira Maeda. So, Kelly.
What about Akira Maeda? Did reminded you of Kelly Kelly?
Well, where to begin, really?
Was it when he fractured Riki Choshu's face?
Kelly Kelly is a shooter, man. You can't, fuck with Kelly Kelly. She will bust you up.
You know,
she will break your orbital bone, man.
Thing about Kelly Kelly is that she would go out and she would challenge all the other, you know, she would challenge the Triple Crown champion, she would challenge the IWGP champion to shoot fights, and they wouldn't respond.
Exactly. Did you see Kelly Kelly challenging for the Triple Crown? No, you didn't, because those bitches were running.
She couldn't get booked. They're afraid of her. Fucking Misawa didn't want to fuck with Kelly Kelly.
Could not book her. She would shoot on them fuckers.
Okay, so what about
only I could do this. Segue to Kelly Kelly. What even was I gonna say? I don't even remember. Oh no, I was just gonna say
it could have been anything.
Well, it could have, like, no, because I brought her up and I just remembered it's because she's on my brain because there's a rumor that she's gonna come back and have a run. Maybe they're gonna put her in their WrestleMania or something.
Oh, that'll be your main
because
event.
Because I think she's gonna be at the Hall of Fame. I don't know if she's inducting Beth Phoenix, but she's gonna be there. She must be friends with Beth.
Yeah.
And yeah, and she was talking about, yeah, I'd love to come back, and I was just, and like everyone else is just like laughing, and
right.
I am like, yes, I am so ready for a Kelly comeback, like so ready. This is stage two. The first step of my like transplanting every diva into the current women's wrestling scene plan is it's working. It's coming because the first step, Mickie James, had a pay-per-view match with Asuka, like holy shit. And now Kelly is gonna like you know go to SmackDown and have like a title match with you know Becky Lynch or Alexa Bliss or some shit. And like Jesus, I'll take it. It's fine. Like yeah. So like just all the divas, every single diva from the previous era, who never got to have a half an hour title match with Sasha Banks, they are all gonna line up in a row and come back to television and have work rate matches and just work rate all over the place. And
I thought that was what we were. That's what the revolution was against.
Well, you would think that, but you would be wrong.
Oh my god.
I need the work rate of Kelly back in my life, and you know, you can take that from me, but
well, you know, maybe it's like Chris Hero where she got released and now she's better than ever.
Well, it could be exactly like that. I feel like it's a good chance. Like, I mean, like, I'm really not kidding. I really like Kelly as a worker.
I thought that she, I honestly thought that she was like the example of like the what we don't want to go back to.
Oh, exactly, and she is like, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
okay. If okay. You,
like, yeah, like I'm just kidding, like with all this shit, but I just.
Okay.
No, but like, I mean, like, if you ask, like, you know, like Sasha Banks or some shit about, like, you know, like the Kelly days, like, that's exactly what they're trying to get away from. You know what I mean?
Right,
like, Kelly's always the example people use because everyone thinks she sucks, and everyone just says that, oh, she can't even run the ropes, and just call her a shit worker because she's really terrible at running the ropes. Even I admit that she's terrible at running the ropes. I just don't care.
Right.
But yeah, no, fully. And that's, but like, my whole thing is that, like, these girls.
Let's see what
from
happens.
That era, like, they actually, like, so many of them were good and so many of them had potential and they just didn't get a chance to show it. And even if they did, nobody actually noticed. And so, like, I would love it, like, in my wildest dreams, if, like, all the girls from that era could, like, somehow magically get to work in this era. And they get to have, like, 15-minute NXT matches, and they get to work on NXT and, like, build up the title matches on pay-per-view and all this sort of shit that the girls now get, and just see what would happen. Because, like, the bare bones is there, and the potential is there with so many of them, that, like, if they actually got a chance to work, I think they would surprise a lot of people.
Yeah. Well,
so
I mean,
that's, like, my, because I love all these girls so much, even though they were, like, just doing the best they could with what they got, you know, like, and so, I mean, like, it's just, that's me, like, my, you know, like, honestly, my biggest fantasy in wrestling is if all the divas could get to work in this era with Sasha Banks and shit, like, and that's why I was so excited when Mickie James got the takeover match with Asuka, because it was like, that's what I want, you know what I mean, like, I would watch every divas girl come in and have a takeover match with Asuka, like, forever.
Well, the good thing is, I mean, that is, if they wanted to do it, that is theoretically something that they could do, because age isn't going to really be a problem.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, yeah, like, girls leave quite young.
they leave quite young. They aren't working as long of matches, so there aren't as many bumps, so their bodies aren't as broken down.
Yeah, they're not beat up. And
they're for the, you know, I granted, I'm sure there's a lot of super unhealthy things that they're involved in.
Yeah.
To,
and I mean, yeah, and some of them got hurt, because, like, Tori Wilson retired because she has a bad back.
Right.
Like, Maryse initially retired because she was too injured. She couldn't work, and but I mean, lots of them are still young. Lots of them are still working. Like a lot of them went to TNA, or, you know, like,
there's not the steroid problem that, you know, ages your tendons and ligaments and shit like that artificially.
Because I mean, you look at Mickey, like, Mickey came back. She hasn't been in the company for like six years or something.
Yeah.
And she walks straight back in, and she doesn't look like she's aged a day.
Right.
And she still works, like, exactly the same.
Yeah. It's just, it would really just be a matter of getting, you know, people like Vince McMahon to look beyond the fact that somebody's 35, you know?
That's what, I mean, Layla...
Look beyond the fact that a woman is 35.
Exactly.
Because obviously, if you're a white male and you're over 35, it's fine in Vince's eyes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Preferable, even.
Like, yeah. Oh, you know when I really felt old was that when I realized that Trish and Lita are, like, in their 40s.
Oh, wow.
I know. Like, I feel like they retired, like, yesterday, but Trish is, like, 41 or something now. Like,
yeah, which, I mean, that's not old. I mean, there's no reason.
But, like, yeah, but even her, like, she could walk back in and have a match now and
at 41 years old, Stan Hansen was 2 years away from the best year of his career. Now, I'm not saying that Trish Stratus is Stan Hansen. But
well, I could probably get that done, but go on.
Maybe not so much ring style, but certainly physical appearance.
Oh yeah, dead ringers.
It's like looking in a mirror. Yeah. I mean, there's no reason why they couldn't all get long runs. Or at least, you know, another run. If Trish and Lita are in their early 40s, and, like, it's not like they're going to go back for Medusa, you know? So, like, 40 is, like, about as old as your top theoretical stars that you could bring back would be, then fuck yeah, you could theoretically see all of them come back.
Yeah. I think that's what gets me, too, is that, like, it's possible. It could happen, but, like, it won't.
Annoys
me. No, definitely. But I'm, like I said, I'm glad I got the Mickie James match. And, like, and honestly, if, like, because it's just a rumor, like I said, because she's going to be around Mania for the other stuff. And she said she's open to it, which, you know, gets the rumor mill going. But, like, if she came back and had some matches, I would be so happy.
Yeah,
like, honestly,
WWE really gave a shit about doing the women's revolution. If they really gave a shit about it, they should fucking do, like, they should try to do, well, I mean, they'd fuck it up, but they should do, like, an invasion angle with all these old women coming back and trying to
take out the divas dinner. Should come and try and, like,
have, like an Ishin Gundam type situation.
Led by Kelly Kelly and Tiffany.
Led by Kelly Kelly and as Riki Choshu.
Yes. And more dead ringers.
Because, I mean, well, like, you know, WWE, we all know they love going back and getting stars from their past. And they've pretty much brought everybody back that they can. You know, they haven't brought Stone Cold back because he doesn't want to come back, but pretty much everybody else from
they've exhausted their options.
They've all come back and had a run. If they had ever actually, like, treated these women well, they could theoretically have, like, a big fucking, you know, invasion sort of angle. Or, if nothing else, like, I just think they should do it. Like, I don't see why, like, why that...
I'm already, like, I'm booking it in my head as we speak.
Yeah, me too, and I'm like, it's a really hot angle.
Because, like, there are so many women, like I said, from that era that they could use, theoretically. Like, Kelly, Tiffany, Michelle, like, Melina, Beth Phoenix. you know, like, just off the top of my head, like Mickey, he was already come back. Like, Mickey will turn on the current Divas and join the Divas. I mean, the current girls and join the Divas team, and she'll be like Steve Austin joining the Invasion.
Yeah, exactly. Only it'll make more sense.
Yeah,
because, I mean, that's, like, that's a plethora of former talent that, you know, you could theoretically do. If they had that many, quote-unquote, name male wrestlers that were left over, or, like, that they had never used before or hadn't used in, like, forever,
Like,
I feel like they would bring them in for a sort of invasion sort of thing.
Yeah, that'd be, yeah, but, yeah, like you said, like, the problem with it is that none of the girls after Trish and Lita were really stars on that level. Like,
yeah,
to where enough people would care if they made a run-in, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, it'd be interesting because it's a run-in, you know what I mean? Like, if anyone invaded, it's cool. Like, even when Nexus invaded, they were nobodies and it was still cool.
Right.
It's an invasion. But, like, yeah, it's, like, I, you know, you'd have to book it really well and get people to care that, like, Kelly is trying to invade the women's division.
Right, it would almost, like...
I would care, though.
Right, and that's what's important.
Yes. I love it when they book for me. So, like,
well,
you know,
yeah, exactly.
They can feel free.
Everybody does. this is about to be insane.
They booked Mickey James in NXT. That was for me. Like,
But I'm thinking of when Tenryu invaded New Japan. They had him go over Choshu early on as a way to kind of quote-unquote make Tenryu in New Japan. But then they had Fujinami beat Tenryu, and that was a way to reheat Fujinami, who hadn't mattered in forever. And so this would almost be like you kind of bring in the old women, and like they get the advantage early on to sort of like heat them back up, kind of remind you of them. Whatever. And then, yeah, the big blow off in the end with the next generation. Like, obviously, ideally, you would want the youngsters to come out on top.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In the end, like, yeah, like, you know, Bayley and Sasha, like, you know, or,
yeah.
You know, like, win the big blow off at Survivor Series. And then, and then Sasha kicks her in the head.
No,
and then they main event WrestleMania 35.
Well, yeah, I think it starts at Survivor Series. Not the blow off. That's like what starts. That's where the old women all work together because the young women have been, you know, they've only ever fought each other. Like Charlotte and Sasha have never had to think about teaming up.
How will they get along?
Exactly. Whereas, you know, Kelly and Michelle McCool are joined together to fight for what's really theirs. It should have been their revolution. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, this would be like the easiest fucking angle ever.
This is great. I love this. I'm gonna be so disappointed with all actual TV now.
with real life.
With real life, yes. It's real life is just now dull in comparison.
I don't know. It just seems easy. Like it's infinitely doable. It just seems easy and not very expensive.
Yes, exactly.
Another way, like you could theoretically get all of the, you know, get all these women to sign, and it would probably be less than one Brock Lesnar contract.
Exactly. You don't have to start the invasion out with Lance Storm doing a run-in, like.
Exactly. And then, you know, theoretically, you could. Maybe one day, you know, if it gets hot enough, fuck it, SmackDown's the women's show now. You know, like there's routes to go, and
exactly.
I think that it would heat up all of the old women that aren't necessarily hot or never were to begin with, like Michelle McCool or Layla or whoever, and make it so one, you get more Hall of Fame contenders down the line. number one.
Seems that they insist on inducting young women into the Hall of Fame,
yeah.
Apparently. Yeah.
Number two, you would have a hotter roster, and you know, you'd have more people that were over on your roster and in your history. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
WWE tells the history of wrestling, and if you know, right now, Michelle McCool or Layla, they really mean nothing in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah,
if they
exactly.
Some like big angle, you could. Kind of say like, oh,
this actually was really important back then in their first run, and you can see it manifest itself when they came back, you know?
Yeah.
So it can kind of work in a lot of different directions.
Yeah, well, there you go. We've just booked the greatest angle, and now...
That was for
now TV is going to suck for a while. Because there's no Divas Invasion. Oh, man. So...
All right.
We should probably end it there. Cause
yeah, we should probably end now that we've booked the whole new... This is a really wild concept for a show. So we're going to talk about random matches, and then we're going to fantasy book by the seat of our pants for an hour.
It's the bogus journey, after all. So.
It's the bogus journey.
Wherever it leads us.
It's not our bogus journey, it's your bogus journey as the listener.
Exactly. Especially today.
Especially today. All right. Well, do you have anything to plug?
No, you have the plug, don't you?
I did want to mention, you know, thank you everybody for listening, and be sure to listen to all the great shows here on Place to Be Nation, especially Chris Zellner's shows. Shout out to Chris Zellner. We spent an hour talking about Between the Sheets before we started and how awesome it is.
We did. This is true.
This is real.
Yeah.
Yes, so thank you for listening. Stacey, thank you for being available.
Wow, that sounded very...
Oh, shit, you're right. Yeah.
It's not that kind of show yet.
Not yet. We'll get there.
We did watch, like, the gay porn TNA match before, but, like, it's not quite that kind of show. Slowly but surely.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm sorry, I just wrecked a nice moment. Thank you, Elliot.
You're the best.
Thank you, too, and thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.